from deep in the heart of Canada, the Samba Squad, with a little number to get your hips moving, Batuque. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. Free Your Mind Friday, for those of you just joining us today for the first time, it is where people take the conversation wherever they want to go. And it is an open forum. You're invited to express yourself, your feelings, your ideas. And of course, you might want to anticipate a reaction as well in the course of the program. People may call in and differ with you, but we are generally very polite group here, and with a great sense of humor, and all we want is to engage each other and to find out what you're thinking, for you to find out what we're thinking, and so it goes. 888-874-4888 is the number to call, and don't be surprised if you find yourself being partnered with someone today who will react to your editorial. Well, we could start with Neil from New Jersey. You're on the air. Hello?
Eutrice.
Yes, you're on the air.
In this last show, Eutrice Lead Show in Black History Month, which I'm not a big fan of Black History Month because 1 month kind of implies that the other 11 months are white history, but okay, it's Black History Month. I called in to talk about a hero of mine and one of the greatest people I believe ever to walk on 2 feet, Paul Robeson. I'm sure that I won't do him justice like Gerald Horn could do, and I believe he's worthy of a show or a week of shows, but I'll do my best because no one else is. First of all, he was a tremendous athlete, 15 varsity letters, tremendous athlete, baseball, basketball, football, track, All-American. He was in the College Football Hall of Fame, which, due to being an activist, he was actually removed from the All-American team. And if there were pro sports at that time, he probably would have been a professional in several sports and probably would have been the best at various sports. Multiple higher education degrees, including valedictorian from Rutgers, Columbia Law School. I would say that if you looked in the dictionary under scholar athlete, there should be a picture of Paul Robeson. He was the original scholar athlete. He spoke 16 languages fluently and studied various other languages, and would actually go to a higher university to study a language just so he would pronounce the words the way they did in that country or at that time. He actually studied Old English so that he could pronounce words in Shakespeare the same way that they would have pronounced them then.
Magnificent, Eutrice.
Hello, wonderful Harvey.
Well, I've been doing some research, and I think I might have found some information that could help people avoid falling prey to the coronavirus. And I used to eat a lot of foods and beverages which contained refined sugar and especially high fructose corn syrup, and the problem was I used to get colds all the time and spiraled into pneumonia 3 times, which nearly killed me. And at that time, I had a friend who was in the medical profession. He was a doctor who worked in the emergency room of a local hospital, and he told me that the simplest form of food for many of our illnesses, including colds and pneumonia, was the simple glucose molecule, better known as sugar. So what I did was I went to my favorite search engine, and I typed the words, the names of sugar, into the search box so I'd know the names of the different refined sugars when I went shopping and looked at the ingredients on the food or beverage products. And the Google search revealed that there are approximately 257 names of sugar, including sucrose, high fructose corn syrup, barley malt, dextrose, rice syrup, amongst others. And it turns out that about 75% of processed foods contain sugars and chemical sweeteners. So I stopped eating and drinking foods with refined sugar in it. And on occasion, I eat ripe organic fruit like apples or bananas, which doesn't seem to bother me. The good part is that I don't catch colds anymore, and I haven't contracted pneumonia since I stopped eating refined sugars and chemical sweeteners. So I did another search, and I typed in, does eating sugar feed viruses as well as bacteria? And the search revealed the quote, bacteria and viruses thrive on sugar. It's their only source of energy. Then I did another search with the words, are colds a virus or a bacteria? And the answer was, as the name suggests, bacteria causes bacterial infections and virus cause viral infections. Examples of bacteria infections including whooping cough, strep throat, ear infections, and urinary tract infections. And viral infections include the common cold, flu, most coughs, bronchitis, chickenpox, and HIV/AIDS. So my thinking is that since refined sugars feed viruses, if I abstain from eating refined sugars, including high fructose corn syrup, even if I come in contact with the coronavirus, that hopefully my natural immune system will not be compromised and it can overcome the coronavirus infection, just like I now overcome common colds and flus during flu season. And I'd like to see a study done of people who got the coronavirus to see what state of health they were in, their diet, and was their immune system in poor health before they became ill with the virus. And right now, I call refined sugar the delicious rat poison. And so hopefully everyone out there, hopefully.
So hopefully. The delicious rat poison.
The delicious rat poison. So I hope that people out there do the same searches that I do, do search for themselves, and I think that they'll find the same information that I found. So that's my key to not getting too sick on the coronavirus, is just avoiding all forms of refined and chemical sugars.
All right. Thank you so much for calling and contributing today. Bill, you are back, we understand. Are you there?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Okay.
I don't know where I was in what was I saying when you lost me?
Well, you were talking about the various ways in which Paul Robeson distinguished himself, not just as an athlete, but a scholar and a person generally concerned with the world and learning about the world and expanding his information about that.
Okay, well, let me go back to, I guess I spoke
about...
Don't
have a lot of time, don't forget.
Okay. All right, well, speaking 16 languages fluently, studying them, the first black performer to actually earn $1 million in this country in a year, the first $1 million black performer, and he gave all of that up to speak out and champion the cause of all oppressed people, not just black people, but all oppressed people. He actually donated his entire earnings in 1933 to Jews fleeing Germany. So he wasn't, you know, he wasn't just for black people, he was for any oppressed people. He took an anti-lynching bill directly to Truman with Albert Einstein in tow, and Albert Einstein signed on to it because he realized the genius of Paul Robeson. Game recognizes game. A genius understands when he's in the presence of a genius, and Albert Einstein knew that. And for all of his activism, the U.S. government rewarded him with essentially economic sanctions. They took his passport so that he couldn't travel abroad. They blacklisted him, and I'm sure they offered him a chance to shut up and go about making your money and we'll leave you alone, but he would not do that. He didn't get his passport back through the Supreme Court when he won against the Supreme Court until 1958, and at that time he was already in poor health. So, in summary, the greatest athlete of all time, one of the greatest scholar intellectuals of all time, one of the greatest singers of all time, the greatest Shakespearean actor of all time, and I would say the greatest activist and champion of oppressed people of all time. And we don't talk about him enough. And just one last thing, married to the same woman for 40-some years, I think 45 years, and never raped anyone. And yes, that is a reference to Kobe Bryant.
Well, I'll tell you, there are many, many things that he had accomplished in his life. And he was known all over the world as a true humanitarian, a human rights champion. And yes. We've talked about it here.
I don't think we talk about him enough. I think we need to talk about him more.
Well, what's
as I said, Gerald Horn would probably be a better
take initiative and begin to familiarize themselves with a lot of these people, not just Paul Robeson, but so many more in the pantheon of human endeavor and championing the rights of people. He was one of them, most certainly.
Yes, indeed.
Also a major victim of government surveillance and government, just pummeling him at every turn, making his life absolutely miserable.
They did everything they could to destroy him. Everything they could to destroy him. And you know he was famous for singing Old Man River, which was written for him. And throughout his career, he would change the words. And toward the end, he actually had changed the line in it to, "I must keep fighting until I am dying."
Dying, yeah. And, absolutely. Thank you for bringing that to our attention, the great Paul Robeson. Thank you so much. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice. I hope all is well. And in regards to that comment from Bill, in regards to Kobe Bryant, it's kind of funny you don't mention that she had 7 different men's semen stains in her underwear on that same day. And I don't think it was rape, but, you know, we could argue about that at another point in time.
But we shouldn't go there until we have the ability to say anything with absolute specificity and proof. And it's not about what we are thinking. It's about what has been established.
The proof of my statement, Utrice, is that this was reported not only in the media, but also by the police department in Denver.
Exactly.
So I think I stand by what I said.
Neither institution deserves automatic credibility. And, I've covered enough cases where there's, quote, proof of all kinds of things that turn out to be simply part of a protracted effort to just destroy people. So I'm not one for automatically saying, well, it was reported that. Well, the media is part of the conspiracy.
And that statement should have been...
We can't go there. The man died rather cruelly. He died even with his daughter, who he was raising to excel at sports management and so forth. Let him rest in peace. We have, for all of the things that they have said about him that are negative, no one yet has produced decisive proof of any of the things that they are saying. And it is a sad thing that in the United States, where a person has launched economic opportunities for so many people. I talked about it with a caller before. In fact, the day he died, he said he was just a basketball player. Well, he was just a basketball player? Do you know anybody who is just a basketball player who helped to propagate a $1 trillion global commercial endeavor and bring a sport out of the doldrums to the world? Do you know such a person? So if we don't have proof, definitive proof, why don't we just let it go until there is proof? We need to have some kind of grace, it seems to me, that you don't, you know, automatically jump on the bandwagon. They don't do that in white America. That when a prominent white person, even a president, dies, the first thing they do is to come up with a negative profile of that person. And that is what we are supposed to remember. I reject that all the time. And so should you. Until somebody produces definitive proof of any and all allegations against a prominent person, we should just walk away and instead talk about the good things that people have done. But immediately, like hound dogs, you know, they went after him, and still without proof. And the community was rather, I thought, placid. These media organizations that engaged in that kind of character bashing, if we had people who were involved and as active as they say in the political realm of things, they would shut these papers and television stations down. When one of your heroes, and I know of Kobe Bryant in terms of his contribution to all kinds of things, charities, academic programs for young people, and directing people the right way, and lots of things. He was not at all perfect. But I will not be silent in the face of just ad hominem attacks against him or anybody like him. I'm not going to stay silent about it, because the assumption is we will do nothing. We will say nothing, and we will tolerate the systematic destruction of people's characters. Imagine the caller who called, and I had to bring him up, saying, well, it was just a game. It's just a game. I can't tell you the depths that people have to go to come up with a statement like that. The depth of hatred. It's a hateful thing. Well, he was just a basketball player. Okay. But guess what? Or Dennis Rodman, just basketball. Dennis Rodman can get Kim Jong-un on the phone anytime. No president of the United States could do that. And their work, we always have to remember, created global commerce that generates trillions of dollars. And we never recognize their contributions in this realm. So, Dennis Rodman is a clown? Fine. Which clown do you have? Who can pick up the phone and say, hey, I want to sit down with you for a minute. Can I come over? And the answer would always be yes. We have to defend our heroes. And we have to defend those who unrighteously are pilloried just because people are so hateful, so jealous, so wrong-headed. They so begrudge them that they would not even give them the smallest compliment, the smallest recognition. So keep that in mind, Jay. Okay, so we move on.
Hello?
Leslie from New York, you're on the air.
Hello. How's everybody?
Hello, Leslie.
Okay,
how are you?
I want to talk about the... I'm good, thank you. I don't have the coronavirus yet, so I'm calling to tell people how they can prevent protect themselves from the coronavirus.
You don't have it yet? What do you mean by a statement like that?
Well, there's a panic. So I thought I would try to help alleviate people's concerns by giving them some information that I got from the orthomolecular.org website. That's spelled orthomolecular.org. They have an article that says vitamin C protects against coronavirus. And they're suggesting that 3,000 milligrams minimum of vitamin C per day in divided doses will keep you healthy. There was one doctor who says he takes vitamin C every hour on the hour, and it knocks out his pneumonia in 1 or 2 days. They also suggest vitamin D3 at 2,000 international units. They suggest magnesium at 400 milligrams daily minimum, magnesium citrate, malate, chelate, or chloride, and zinc at 200 milligrams a day, and selenium at 100 micrograms daily. Now, Dr. Linus Pauling wrote a book several years ago, decades ago, called Vitamin C and the Common Cold. The Common Cold is also a coronavirus. So this formula should prevent you from getting anything in the coronavirus family, influenza and pneumonia. And if you do get them, doubling up on these things will probably knock out all your symptoms.
Well, the thing is, we don't know. There are all kinds of theories as to what would work, and many of them come out of the field of alternative medicine, actually, so that people can put themselves in charge of their health. On the flip side of that, people are still skeptical about how they can prove that certain things do work and produce the kinds of results that people are expecting. But I say, it is important to just the same pay attention to these things. As you know, I have cancer. I did my first program on it when I was in the hospital and first diagnosed. And I have not gone through mainstream medical treatment at all. I have had no chemotherapy or anything like that. And I don't intend to have that, because my own sense tells me if these remedies, quote unquote, destroy your cancer cells, I mean, the cancer cells won't segregate themselves in your body and say, oh, we're over here, just pay attention over here, you can kill us all off. No, it will take a toll on your good cells as well. That's my thinking.
Linus Pauling also wrote a book called Cancer and Vitamin C, and he gave gave vitamin C intravenously. So it was a direct
quite a few
treatment.
Alternative
since
treatments.
Most people don't have access to that. Several thousand.
But you still have to take them with a grain of salt, in a sense. Because in that field, you know, you have to have a thorough investigation and documentation of how people have applied their theories, the results that they found, and those results being accepted in some kind
That's why
of medical
this website is written by doctors and it has research to back them up. So if you go to orthomolecular.org, they give you all the background, all the studies, and you'll see why this cocktail of vitamins and minerals will probably prevent you from getting any coronavirus. I personally, before this, I drink chamomile tea and echinacea tea on a regular basis, and I've rarely had any colds in the past 20 years. So this is taking it one step further, because I also take most of these vitamins, but now I'm going to start taking them triple dose to make sure that I don't get sick.
Well, that's the key, to do your research and to satisfy yourself that the reports that are being disseminated are credible and worth exploring. You know, that's something very important to do. Thank you so much for contributing today. I'm glad to hear you. Mitch from New York, you're on the air. Okay, you're not on the air. Where is Mitch?
Okay,
Vincent
there was a crime
from
hey,
hello. Am I pointing across without getting nervous?
Hello?
Can
Who's
you hear
on
me?
The air right now?
Mitch? I hear you, Utrecht.
Hello, is this Mitch?
No, this is Vincent from New York, if you can hear me.
Oh, yes, Vince, I can hear you.
I just called to give a shout out to one of the great men of all time who was an ancestor, who I think doesn't get enough recognition throughout the year, especially on surprise in this Black History Month, and that's Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad. He should be mentioning every day, I think, of Black History Month, since the month is so short, but his impact is so long. This would be a great benefit for Black people going forward in this year of 2020. To uplift the spirits of African people worldwide and in the United States of America. That's all I have to say for right now.
Okay.
Have a good afternoon.
I mean, you're making a blanket statement. Is there anything in particular that you think that Khalid Abdul-Muhammad, Minister Khalid as he was called, what contribution do you think he made?
From what I can say for right now that we're lacking, that his contribution did in the past, was speaking up, giving a strong Black presence by speaking his thoughts and opinions without fear, and taking on those who would like to debate his ideas and thoughts and opinions.
What do you think of people who said he specialized in irritating white people especially.
Irritating them.
Yep.
Maybe because they would say that because he was irritated from their past behavior and current condition that we were in at the time when he gave that feeling. Maybe because that he needed to show that we, that he was just talking at the time when others didn't want to talk or couldn't talk or express their thoughts and ideas at that time. They
Do
were
you
frustrated.
Consider him always responsible in the way that he presented his thoughts?
Say that again, please.
Was he always responsible in the way that he expressed his thoughts?
I can't answer that at this time. I will have to think about that further.
Okay. What did you personally gain from exposure to his thoughts and his teachings?
To question what he says and see how he will follow up the things that he said and done.
Uh-huh.
And see how his effect had for the inspiration and direction of Black people and the dynamics of it.
Okay. Do you feel elevated because of your exposure to him or his exposure to you?
It depends on what you call elevated. My thing.
I mean, do you feel more certain about your thoughts? Do you feel counseled? Do you feel educated about the teachings? Because he undertook a lot of teaching. Did it elevate you? Did it cause you to think better of yourself?
Well, even before I met Dr. Khalid and after, I always thought well of myself. If you say better, I said well of myself. But it allowed me to further think about some of the things he said that I often would have thought about questioning or bringing up to him when he was alive. But it was good to know that we have something today called YouTube to show some of his lectures. I did not see some of the things he said that I didn't have an opportunity to see him say personally and see some of the responses, but also to see how things have come today from things he said that I didn't see when he was alive.
Mm-hmm.
And to speak with him personally and for him to tell me something that I was a little shocked about, but it was nice to have that a small conversation with him to see how our spirits connected.
Well, you know, I'm glad that you are presenting it this way, because there's intense pressure for people to automatically come to a conclusion about how militant he was, how basically hateful he was, rather than say, that's up to your interpretation. And if you found value in what he was teaching or attempting to teach, that puts you up a notch a bit, because now you have something to think about and explore that you hadn't thought about before. But the natural and the consistent reaction to people in our community who emerge as teachers or as intellectuals is to hate them. Don't even listen to what they're saying. Don't contemplate it, because we supposedly don't have the wherewithal to evaluate individually what a person is saying and make up our own minds. And he was such a person. The entire nation had feared him so much that they didn't want to engage, even if they disagreed, to find out what really was he teaching, what was he talking about, how valid was it. And so they first disengaged and encouraged others to disengage, and utterly destroy. That was the attitude. And we had some of that talking today with Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant was not a political person, and yet the program was the same. Hate this guy. You should automatically hate him. And you shouldn't be thinking and weighing for yourself the legitimacy of what he's being accused of. You should hate him. And that didn't work too well, but it was nonetheless the program that was designed to destroy, utterly destroy, Khalid Muhammad. We were not supposed to listen to Malcolm X because he was a radical. He was crazy. He had these bizarre thoughts. But as you know, if you listen to his lectures, there was nothing bizarre about what he was saying. He was right on point. And the community as a whole, the black community as a whole, and white America, I would add, needed to listen to what he had to say and evaluate it. Had that been done, we would have been way ahead in this dynamic in the United States that is exclusively based on racial animus. The people automatically are to be dismissed. They have nothing of value to offer. What they're saying is just hateful, and so they don't deserve anybody's attention. I'm glad you're thinking for yourself. And thank you for joining us today and offering it. Thank you. Well, let's see who else we have. Moki from Connecticut, you're on the air.
Hope everyone's doing okay.
Well, thank you. That's a good thought.
Really appreciate your commentary today. And a caller, you know, Paul Robeson has always been one of my, well, as soon as I first heard about him after college, my greatest American heroes. But I just wanted to remind you of a personality that I think you're already aware of. I'd like the listening audience to know as much as they can find out about an American hero, or more specifically, a Pan-African hero to me. That would be Venture Smith. Of course, you know who Venture Smith is, Utrecht.
No.
No? Well, V-N-T-U-R-E, like adventure without the ad.
Right. No, Venture I don't Smith. No, I'm not familiar with Venture Smith.
Sorry?
I'm not familiar. So tell me about him.
He died at approximately the age of 76. In the year 1805. He was brutally stolen from his home in, I think it's pronounced Dukandara, Guinea, when he was about 16 years old. So he lived in America for about another 60 years, and he wound up buying property, I think it was on the Connecticut River, in a town called East Haddam. After making enough money, working overtime, that is, after he finished his duties for his master, he worked overtime fishing and hunting and farming for others to make enough money to buy his wife and family's freedom. And so he acquired, at the end, about 100 acres in East Haddam, Connecticut, and was considered a successful business person. He's not a hero in the greater sense of affecting the lives of thousands and millions of people, But in my eyes, he's a hero because he really made the best of it and became successful. And I think he dictated his autobiography about 6 years before he died. I think it was I'm trying to look up who he dictated it to. But I think that's enough of a link, just to know his name. And and I encourage people to follow up.
Well, I thank you, because I did not hear, you know, it's not a name that pops up in my head. So clearly I missed any documentation or any report on Venture Smith worth looking into, I would say. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
You did a great thing by teaching me something I didn't know. Thank you.
I didn't know you didn't know it, but I wanted to at least notify the listening community that it's worth looking into.
Yes, it is.
Personalities that aren't known on a national or international basis, like the fabulous Paul Robeson. And if I can have the time to just say, as far as Dr. Cornel West, another hero of mine, he's a living repository of history.
Yes.
And I believe that he possesses the most brilliant powers of analysis in the world and critical thinking. He's the Einstein of our times, in my opinion.
Okay. Well, I have different people who I think of in a very similar way. And I really should get on with my expanding my reading. I haven't been reading as voraciously as I used to, so I need to do that. Thank you very much for bringing that to our attention today. So, Mitch, supposedly you're back.
Mitch is back from Vulcan, yeah.
Okay, Mitch.
Hi. Hello?
Yes, I'm listening.
Yeah, that was something happened here in New York a couple of months ago. It was brutal. A lady in Morningside Heights was killed. Her name was Tessie Gilbert, I think it was.
Yes, we spoke about this case, yes.
Now, they arrested three people for this crime, so they say that was committed. One was 13, and the other two was 14 years old. Now, the 13-year-old, they say they're prosecuting as a juvenile. But the two 14-year-olds, they're going to be treated as adults. Now, there was a law that passed in 2019, stating that anyone below the age of 17 must be prosecuted as a juvenile. But for this crime, they apparently going to lift that law, and they're going to prosecute these 14-year-old children as adults. Now, the crime itself is juvenile. If they say that the reason this happened was to take a cell phone, that's nothing that an adult would do, anybody with a mature mind. And to say that you're going to give these 14-year-olds life in prison for a juvenile that should be prosecuted as a juvenile leaves me the question.
Well, I disagree. The crime is not necessarily to be linked to what is being explained as the purpose of the crime. The crime is taking a life as violently as they did and running from the scene. They didn't stay there to account for themselves. They brutally killed this woman. And so you can make a distinction on that basis, I think, about the severity of the crime warranting them to stand trial on that basis. These were not young kids doing young kid things of, oh, she's got a phone, let's go get it. They punctured her lungs. They stabbed her. Well, one of them did anyway. She was stabbed. She was choked. And the intention by all of them was to kill her. And they did. There's nothing juvenile about that.
Yes, it was, too. It was crimes that were committed by somebody that wasn't, by juveniles.
They're juveniles. It's not adults. If you see the case purely in terms of chronology, because you say, well, these are 14-year-olds and 13-year-olds. These are not full adults. But that should not be the basis for actually adjudicating this crime. I don't think so. Because even though they were kids, quote unquote, they did a very adult, a very nasty adult thing. They intended to take her life and they did it. They were vicious in the way they took her life. And then they decided to try and escape culpability for it. They didn't act like juveniles then. When they said, well, we did something really bad, we're sorry, and we're coming forward. No. Their mindset was that they were entitled. They had the right, a legal right too, to kill her. And their families agreed. Nobody gave them up. Nobody found that close to them, people who raised them, found that this was highly objectionable. They weren't acting like kids. There was nothing that they did that suggested they believed themselves to be kids, children. So I don't know how you can say this was the action of young people, underage people, and they should therefore not suffer the imposition of the law. There are certain crimes that children or young people under the age of 17 commit all the time. This, I think, you need to defend this to me. When you're talking about murder, I don't think that you can insist that this is a crime of a juvenile. How do you defend it?
I'm not defending the crime itself. It was committed and it was brutal. But I'm saying the mindset of these people that did it were not mature. I think mental health therapy would be better suited than 50 years in prison.
They took a life. And they knew it was wrong. They knew that under no circumstances would it be acceptable. They took a life. They got to pay.
Yeah. Wow.
This is the brutal fact.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why should they be exempt? Because
I'm not saying they should be exempt. I'm not stating they should be exempt. I'm saying it was a brutal crime. But I'm saying at the age that they committed this drastic thing to this young lady, it was for a cell phone. You know, a mature person wouldn't do this. They say they wanted to take her cell phone or something like that.
Yeah.
This is a crime that would
be. But continue the thought. Don't stop there.
Juvenile.
He said they wanted to take her cell phone. Now continue the thought.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying the crime was committed. All I'm saying is these were juveniles.
Their mind is not a mature mind. Yeah, it's not a mature mind, but that's to you. At the time this crime was committed, it was a crime to them. They understood what they were doing. Hmm. Okay, so you want the phone. Well, why should you now extend that, which is opprobrious to me, why should you extend that rationale to, and therefore, I could kill her and get the phone?
Yeah, I don't,
well. You see, okay. This is it?
Yes, well, you know, but what it brings to my mind, though, there was something that happened down in, I think it was Texas, where this guy, he was drunk, he ran into the sidewalk, he killed three people. And
right.
He brought up the fact that he was so sheltered in his life bringing up that he didn't have no, you know, he didn't know what he was doing. You know, he was just, you know, he was, what do they call this thing? He was influenced by his bringing up. His parents were very rich, and he killed these three people. He was drunk. And he was exonerated from this because they say he was so sheltered and his mindset was so that he didn't know what he was doing.
Oh, my God. The things that they come up with
the
as a defense.
Same thing here. You know, these kids are 14 years old.
Right. And
stealing
violent.
A cell phone. Who would go out and steal a cell phone?
They're
from somebody?
14 years old and they are violent and they believe that they are entitled, if they want to kill somebody, they're entitled to do that and not suffer any repercussions. That's what they believe. Now, we should stop making excuses for him and for them and the guy who supposedly was so rich that he had no sense of reference about what was right or wrong. Well, now you should know. Put him in jail and let him rot. Let him rot there. You don't have to be wealthy to know that what you're doing is wrong and there's a price to pay when you do wrong. If the shoe were on the other foot, he most certainly would agree that there should be a price to pay when you commit something like that. This particular killing of Tessa in Morningside Heights, in the park, says a lot about the level of deterioration that we have experienced and still are experiencing in the African American community. It took a long time. Nobody gave them up. I know, I grew up in an era where you couldn't possibly believe that your parents are going to come to protect you after you've done something like that. Well, that means I'm hearing the music. It means we got to go. Thank you, everybody, for putting your thoughts out there to present your points of view and for doing it with such style and grace and a kind of resolve that you're okay with talking about things, even if they appear to be unpleasant. But we're grown folks. We can talk. Have a good weekend. We'll see each other on Monday if everything goes well.